Today on Family Talk.
In writing to the church at Corinth, the Apostle Paul wrote, "Follow me as I follow Christ." Those in leadership positions need to be aware of how they influence those who look up to him. This is Family Talk, a ministry of the James Dobson Family Institute. I'm Roger Marsh, and today I'm joined once again by our host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. And Doctor, it is a sad reality that many celebrities don't realize how their lives impact the next generation. There was a time when parents used to be able to point their kids at good, wholesome role models, and sadly, it seems like there just aren't that many of those anymore.
Well, that's unfortunately true. And yet, parents should take heart because there are still positive role models and leaders out there, and you just have to look a little harder to find them. We heard from one of them last time on Family Talk. I'm speaking of former NFL coach Tony Dungy, and we have another day of recorded conversation with him today. We've already heard a bit about his childhood and even how a tragedy in his family helped to shape him into the man he's become. Today, he's going to share with us more life lessons, as he calls them, that he teaches to others through his best-selling books. And, of course, his program, All Pro Dad,
Yes. Which
seeks to strengthen and train men who want to be great dads.
Yeah, that's such an important topic to support, especially in this troubling culture for young boys.
Now, most of our listeners are going to be familiar with the other aspects of Tony's career. He was the head coach for the Indianapolis Colts and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He led the Indianapolis Colts to a Super Bowl win in 2006, becoming the first African-American coach to do so. Coach Dungy has retired from coaching football now, and he lives in Tampa, Florida with his family, and the Lord continues to use him in his strong moral leadership to touch lives. And I consider it an honor to call Coach Dungy my friend.
Well, he truly is an incredible man of God, and millions of people look up to him. Doctor, let's dive back in now to your classic conversation with Coach Tony Dungy on this edition of Family Talk.
Coach, I mentioned at the end of our program last time that we've obviously been talking about your family, your children, your parents, your Christian heritage. If our listeners didn't hear the program last time, that's one that I would really like to see them get a CD of because there's so much there. Let's go back to your very early years, your childhood. You started playing football, I believe, in junior high as a quarterback. Is that right?
I did. I started playing when I was 12 years old, actually. Playing baseball with my dad was the first sport I got involved with, and then I really enjoyed basketball, but football became the sport I was best at, and I played quarterback on the junior high team and all the way through college.
Were you a superstar in high school?
I guess you could say that. I was pretty highly recruited and had a chance to go to USC. You remember?
And you turned it down?
Well, I'll tell you why.
Coach,
I turned it down. I was a quarterback.
Oh, my goodness.
John McKay was the head coach.
Yeah. Right.
Pat Hayden was the quarterback, and he lived with John McKay, so I didn't figure I'd have too much of a chance to play. But ended up going to the University of Minnesota, and it was a great experience for me.
As long as we're talking about John McKay, there was another moment that I'll never forget. He went on to Tampa Bay, and he was not successful there. He had an expansion team, and they just got beat over and over. They were terrible. And after the game one day, the reporters were asking him questions, and one of them said, "Would you comment on the execution of your team today?" And he said, "Yes, I'm in favor of it."
he had a lot of those.
Do you remember that quote?
I do remember it well. And one of my biggest thrills, as I mentioned coming here, was going to Tampa, getting the head job, and sitting at John McKay's desk. It was just an awesome thrill for me.
Well, he was quite a man.
Yes.
Now, you went to the University of Minnesota and played quarterback and set records in the Big Ten that lasted for a long time. In fact, you were the MVP, most valuable player, 2 years at Minnesota.
Yes.
You had quite a sparkling career there.
Had a real fun career and enjoyed it tremendously. Got to learn a lot about football, offensive football, and I thought I was going to be a quarterback in professional football, and I didn't get drafted. So I had a chance to go anywhere.
Wasn't that a shock?
It was a shock.
To be one of the better quarterbacks in the country?
It was a shock, and it was just one of the things, I think, the way the Lord had things planned out, but I couldn't really understand why I didn't get picked. I had a chance to go to Canada and play in the Canadian League and really get some guaranteed money and a nice contract. But I wanted to play in the NFL. I wanted to play with the best. So I went to the Pittsburgh Steelers. They had Terry Bradshaw at the time and didn't really need quarterbacks. So I got changed to defense and knew nothing about defense, had never played defense in my life. And here I am going to the best team in football and trying to learn on the run. But I can look back on it now and see it was just the Lord's plan of teaching me about the total game so I'd be a better coach. But I went there, as I mentioned, and really got hooked in with a neat group of Christian guys. That was another benefit of going to Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Just a great group of guys who brought me along spiritually. But they taught me how to play defensive football, and that helped.
I think you got something like a $2,000 bonus.
I did.
Is laughable.
When I
today.
Tell our players now that I signed for $2,000 and I made $20,000 my first year, our players can't even comprehend that.
But
now.
You were glad to get through training camp. You didn't even know you'd make the team.
Exactly.
Right?
I just wanted to go and learn as much as I could, and you're hoping to make the team. And we had some Hall of Fame players there at that time. They were in the midst of that four Super Bowl and 6-year run, and it was just an awesome experience. And probably the best thing was playing for Chuck Knoll. I learned so much from him about not only football, but about being a man and being a man of your word and of high character. He was a tremendous guy to play for.
But you had a short career, three
years. I did. I played 2 years there. We went to the Super Bowl my second year. My third year, I got traded to the San Francisco 49ers, who were really struggling at the time. And I went there 1 year and played, and then I was basically out of football. And that's what I try to get across to my players. The average career in the NFL is 3.6 years.
So
and people think they're going to play a long time and make all this money, but it's not. You have to have a lifestyle.
So when you talk to your players now about the fact that don't make football the centerpiece of your life, there has to be more than that, and something is Jesus Christ.
Absolutely, and I use my own life as an example that I thought when I was their age at 22, it was going to be my profession, playing. That's what I was going to do, and all of a sudden, it's not there. And if you are just totally wrapped up into football, you can fall apart. You need that foundation, and for me, that foundation was Christ.
Or anything else, as a matter of fact.
You could probably say that about every other profession.
It's really true. I talk to so many men who buy into the notion that if they're successful in their profession, whether it's medicine or law or whatever it is, and they pour every last energy into it to the exclusion of family and relationships and the Lord. In the 40s, they began realizing something's wrong here. I have succeeded in this. I have made the money. I've reached my goals. And there's got to be more to a fire than that. And they start looking around. In fact, I didn't make that mistake, but I was heading in that direction. And when I was 43 years of age, I walked out of USC School of Medicine and started Focus on the Family. Partly for the same reason, that as much as I was enjoying what I was doing there and in the research and everything, I loved the academic setting, but there was something more important than that, and started a little, opened a little two-room office and called it Focus on the Family and had no idea where it was going, but it was that same restlessness that said, there's something more here.
Absolutely, and we see it. Unfortunately, in sports, it happens faster. Your lifespan as an athlete is quick, and we see guys that are 27, 28 years old, and they come to this realization. I practiced all my life. I've gotten here. I am successful. I'm in the National Football League, and what's going on? My marriage is not very good. Financially, I'm struggling because I made some bad choices, and I've got what the world would say, well, you got a tremendous job, and they're not fulfilled.
And it blow out a knee or something, then it's suddenly over.
And then what are you going to do? What is your foundation? If your foundation is football, it can fall apart, just like that guy who built his house on the sand. Uh-huh. I'd had some a trial with being sick in training camp and not knowing if I was going to make the team. I had gotten traded a couple times.
You told us last time you had mononucleosis,
and I came to this conclusion that I had put my career first, and that was the wrong thing to do. Once I came to that conclusion, then things started happening. I got traded from the best team in football to the worst team. And the year before, that would have blown me away. But by then, I said, you know what? If I really am putting God first, he's got something for me out there. And again, as I look back on it now, it was perfect because he was preparing me to be a coach. He had already moved me from an offensive player to a defensive player. I had seen how a championship team did things. Now I got traded. I got the opportunity to play for Bill Walsh and see how he put a team together from the ground up. And that's what I was going to have to do years later when I became the head coach at Tampa.
You trained with some of the very best, didn't you?
Right. I don't think that was an accident either. I think the Lord put me in these guys' path to really teach me.
And then you became a defensive coach and started a whole new career.
Yes. After I had finished playing, Coach Noel called me and he said, hey, if you don't know what you're going to do, I'd love to have you come back and coach for me. I really like how you applied yourself when you were here. You can help these guys and help us be a better team. And that
was
a shock.
Were you praying about that at the time?
I was praying. I was praying for the Lord to show me what he wanted me to do. And I wouldn't have thought it would be going back to Pittsburgh because a lot of these guys were still there that had trained me, that I was asking them the questions, and now I'm coming back at 25 years old as the coach. And it was a little awkward, but it was a lot of fun, and it was where the Lord wanted me to be.
Well, you were with a number of teams and then became the head football coach of Tampa Bay and were very successful there and then flat out got fired.
We did. We went to Tampa. As you say, it was a tough situation. They had losing records for a number of years. We got the team turned around, and we were winning. We were in the playoffs 3 years in a row, but didn't get to the Super Bowl. And I think there was some frustration that we didn't get there. And I got fired after our third trip to the playoffs, which was unusual.
That's a tough sport where you could be that successful and wind up looking for a job.
It was, but again, it comes back to that thing that we talked about. If you put your faith, if you put your identity in your job, you can be disappointed. And for me, I just looked at it as the Lord trying to take me to another place. I didn't know for sure if it was there in Tampa. I'd had some ministries that I'd gotten involved with. Family First was one of them. We'd started an Yes. All-Pro Dad program, and I thought maybe I was supposed to go full-time with All-Pro Dad. And then Jim Irsay called, and he said, you're the type of coach that I want with the Colts. And I realized it was the Lord moving me to Indianapolis.
What about your wife, Lauren? Was she supportive of what you're doing? It's a tough life, and it's not an easy assignment for the wife of a head football coach either.
No, that football coach's wife is a tough job, and she was very supportive. She was involved in the Buccaneers women's organization and did some things to bring some spiritual growth into the wives and the women. And she had the same tough time when they tell you, okay, we don't want you anymore. She's very supportive of her husband and hurt feelings and where should we go from here? And then it would have been very easy to stay in Tampa. And our family was comfortable there. She was in some ministry things. But she said, no, I think the Lord's calling you to Indianapolis. So we are. We're going to uproot our family again and move and try to find that church and find the schools and all the things that they have to do. So she's been a tremendous help and part of that we group that we're talking about.
I asked this question before, but let me ask it another way because I want you to elaborate on it. Were there times when you and Lauren were in your bedroom with the door shut, you were on your knees, and you were talking to the Lord, and you said, Lord, our lives belong to you. This is yours. We have walked with you to this point. You have led us to now, and we're not sure where the future leads. We don't know what road to take, and we will do anything you want if you'll just tell us what your will is. Is that characteristic of what was going on?
Very much so. We've had a couple of those situations, but certainly at the end of the 2001 season, and we didn't know what direction we should go, didn't know if we'd get another offer to coach in the National Football League. But if we did, should we take it? And our family, which is very important to me, was tremendously comfortable in Tampa. We had a daughter who was a junior in high school. We didn't think that was the proper time to move her. So maybe the Lord was taking us out of football and maybe possibly taking us into some ministry work in Tampa.
Well, you went to Indianapolis and built the finest team in the National Football League. And that brings us up to the Super Bowl of February of 2007. What kind of pressure is on you, not only to win, but to handle all the media and everything else?
It didn't really hit me until the Monday before the game. We actually went down on Monday night, and I guess everyone expected us to come on Sunday. That's when most teams normally come. Yeah. And I told our players we were going to go to church and have the weekend to their families, and we'd go down on Monday. We got there at 8 o'clock Monday night, and you'd have thought I shot the president. How could you not be here? We had all these, you know, media set up.
I remember that.
Yeah, it was a firestorm. Yeah. And so that's when I first realized this is a little bigger than a normal game. And then Tuesday morning you have the media from all over the world, and that's when it hits you that this is not just our country's event. This is a world event.
With all of that pressure and with the thoughts of immortality and everything else that go along with winning a Super Bowl, you did not forget who you are as a follower of Jesus Christ. I watched you carefully. I was among the billion people out there that was listening to what you were saying. And you were consistent with your faith right in the midst of the firestorm.
I knew what that moment was. I had played in a Super Bowl game, so I knew what it was going to be like. And I knew when the clock was winding down, when we had a minute left, and we were going to win the ball game. I said, I'm going to get 30 seconds on the podium in front of the whole world, and what am I going to say? And I wanted to let people know that as happy as we were and as excited as we were, it was still doing it for the Lord, and that was the most important thing in my life.
Compare two different kinds of thrills for me. One of them is winning the NFC Championship and going on to the Super Bowl, and all of the accolades that come from that. The other is the sense that you're doing God's will, that He's pleased with you, and bringing someone to Christ or emphasizing the importance of fatherhood and families. Where do you get your greatest satisfaction?
By far, from really having people understand that the Lord's in control of your life and what He can do for them. The Super Bowl was a great experience, but a bigger story for me, and we said it at the end of our book, a lady told us that her brother, after hearing us on the victory stand and talk about doing things for Christ, decided to sell his home and go and help the Katrina victims. Yeah. And, you know, when you get things like that or people saying, hey, I got to talk to my son about Christ because you guys mentioned it on TV, you can't substitute for that.
You have not lost that compassion and sensitivity to people. I have heard about a truck driver from Iowa who had lost his son, I believe, in a motorcycle accident. Tell us about that.
It was written about in Sports Illustrated. This gentleman had lost his son, who was a tremendous golfer. And I read the story, and I knew how he felt. So I just sent him a little note and said, if you ever want to talk about it, give me a call. And he did. And we became very good friends. We talked about what it's like to miss your oldest son. And he was driving.
Because you lost yours.
Because I lost my son. And we've developed a great relationship, as I have with probably 40 or 50 dads over the last 18 months. And he talked about, you know, being excited for us being at the Super Bowl. And I said, hey, do you want to come? And he said, hey, I'd love that. And he came down, and he and my pastor got to pray with him and just talk about God's love. And it was a tremendous meeting
that
we had.
How did you find the time and energy to give to a man out there who was in need at a time when all the pressures of the world were on you?
There wasn't a lot of pressure. I mean, the Super Bowl, I knew that was going to take care of itself. And just things like that are a lot more special. And my wife says you can make time for what's important to you.
Well, we got a couple of minutes left. I want to talk about two different subjects very quickly. The first, we've made reference to it before, but let's do it again in more detail. What is All Pro Dads, and what is Family First, and why are you involved in it?
Family First is the parent organization in Tampa, Florida. I got involved when I was the coach of the Bucks, and we developed this offshoot, All Pro Dad, to really encourage men to be more active in their kids' lives. There's a website, allprodad.com, that you can go to and really get tips on how to be a better dad, how to make that time that we all don't have, how to make that count. And it's been an awesome, awesome experience.
And Family First.
Family First is really, it's a not-for-profit organization that is really, really sensitive to making families better. Yes. And that's what it's all about. And Mark Merrill's the president. He and I became good friends, and we really talked about how could we use my position in the National Football League, what we do, and some of our players, and really leverage that to make family situations better. And I've had a great privilege. A lot of people have called my office and said, I know you do something with families and dads. Couldn't remember the number, but I knew the Colts number. So, you know, can you help me? And I could say, hey, you can go to All Pro Dad, go to Family First, and really help them with a family situation. And, again, that gives me a great deal of satisfaction.
Let's conclude with a quick review or overview of your new book. It has just come out. I have not even gotten my copy yet.
We'll make sure we get one.
It is entitled Quiet Strength, and the subtitle is, and I have to read here, the principles, practices, and priorities of a winning life. I'm going to have to work on that a little bit. That does say it all, though. It's really your story.
It is, and that's what I wanted to get across to people, that this is not a story about winning the Super Bowl, but really what makes a winning life, and that you can win without winning the Super Bowl if you have Christ at the center. And if you don't have Christ at the center, even winning the Super Bowl is not going to help you.
It's really an evangelistic message, isn't it?
It is.
You're 51 years of age. Do you see yourself stepping away at any time in the near future?
Well, it depends on what we define near future. We've got a few more Super Bowls to win, hopefully, but I do see myself at some point getting more involved with my family as our younger kids grow up. I see myself getting involved more with Family First, and there's a prison ministry in Tampa that I'm really highly involved with, too, and at some point I'll be doing more of that and less football, for sure.
Coach Tony Dungy, the time has gone by so fast for both these programs, and we have a gallery just completely full of people out there and people waiting around the outside hoping for a seat. And I think they would like to ask you some questions. Would you be willing to do one more program, and we'll invite those folks to come to the microphone?
I would love to. That'd be a lot of fun and would be a great honor.
You're a very good man. Thank you for being with us these 2 days. We'll go one more, and I don't think anybody's going to forget it. Blessings to you, Coach. You are the author of the new book, Quiet Strength, which is about your life and principles and priorities. And I just hope that there are millions of people out there who would like to read that book. I haven't quite gotten my copy yet, but Coach Dungy has offered to send me, I think, an autographed copy, and I do
Absolutely.
Hope so.
Absolutely.
And we will enjoy it with everybody else. Thanks again to being with us today. We'll go one more day next time.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
You've been listening to Family Talk and Dr. James Dobson's popular conversation with NFL Hall of Fame coach Tony Dungy. Be sure to come back again tomorrow, and you'll hear a meaningful Q&A session featuring Coach Tony Dungy and the studio audience who were with us on that day. In the meantime, be sure to go to our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. You'll find a link for Coach Dungy's book called Quiet Strength. It is a fascinating read. On our site, you'll also see information about the organization's All Pro Dad and Family First as well. And you can request a CD copy of this classic interview while you're there as well. Click on the Order a CD button, and you'll receive your copy of this broadcast. You'll find all that information and much more by visiting drjamesdobson.org and then clicking on the Broadcast page. Well, be sure to join us again tomorrow to hear Coach Tony Dungy answering questions from a studio audience. It's an enlightening broadcast that you won't want to miss, coming your way on tomorrow's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. Have a great day.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Tim Clinton, Executive Director of the James Dobson Family Institute. Our ministry here exists to honor the Lord through ministering to today's families and marriages all over the world. We couldn't accomplish that, however, without your support. And as the JDFI, the James Dobson Family Institute, continues to grow, we need your help. Visit us, will you do that, at drjamesdobson.org or call us toll-free at 877-732-6825. Stand with us and fight for righteousness and culture.